Zizi, how are you?
If it's not as melodic as what's on the record, play what's on the record.
This can't really be how you feel about being a mother.
It's the best thing I've ever done with my life.
I can picture you and Slash having long conversations.
You gotta really believe in what you're doing.
Who are the top five blues artists that everybody should know about, but that they probably don't know? I was watching last night this performance of you and Billy Gibbons and Orianti playing Sharp Dressed Man. It was such a great performance. And you are shredding harmonica in this performance. They're all trading guitar licks. And you're taking up the harmonica and shredding the harmonica. How'd you learn how to play harmonica?
I learned to play harmonica mostly from my father. My dad played blues harmonica. And he's really, really good. And I didn't play for a really long time. I think because he was so good, I was kind of intimidated. And I was like, I've been singing a lot around him growing up, and he'd always teach me how to sing and stuff. So I think when it came to harmonica, I was like, I don't know. I just never really got into it that much. I remember like playing once and I was like, I don't know, I think like 17 or something. And I felt like when I played, we were on like vacation and I grabbed a harmonica and I played for a second. I remember thinking in my head, I was like, I'm good at harmonica. Like, I'm good at this, but I didn't do it. And then cut to like, I think it was like 2012 or something. And I played on stage on If I Could Be Here, which is one of my songs. And everybody like freaked out. And I was like, I need to do this.
Wait, but what do you mean? Like, did you just take a harmonica that happened to be in the right key and do you just like blow into it and that worked for you? Or you had been like spending time slaving over how to play this freaking instrument?
I don't think I was slaving time. It depends what song you're playing on. Like some songs that you can't, it's tricky with harmonica. Like it really goes to like, there's skill levels of being a harmonica player where like a lot of things are like in a cross key. So like you count up four keys and then like you can play in that song. But some songs are not like that. Like not everything works with harmonica, and there are, you know, so for me, it was something like that. I probably made up the solo and then I went and played it, you know, like everybody's a different kind of player, you know, with like musicianship, guitarists in general, harmonica players. So I think for me, that was something that I sat with and I wrote it in my head and then I played it. And when I played it, people really liked it. And then I was like, oh, that was dope. That was a fun experience. Like, I want more of that, you know? And so then I started playing it more.
Wait, so when you're doing this thing with Billy Gibbons and Orianti, like, are you freaking out that you know you're going to have to take this harmonica solo? Or at that point, are you pretty confident on the instrument?
I mean, playing next to Billy Gibbons, I don't think you really feel that confident. Like, I wasn't. Like, I know, like, I was confident in my abilities and my talent, and and I tell myself, there's a reason you're on this stage. You know what I mean? There's a reason you're up here. So own it. You know what I mean? And like, that just goes back to the way that I was brought up. But like, that being said, Billy Gibbons like looking at me and being like, take it, ZZ. I'm like, it's okay. You're okay with calling me that? That's like a trip.
Wait, but how did you know what to play on the harmonica? Because have you secretly spent like hours and hours and hours mastering the harmonica?
That one?
Yeah.
On that song? No, I practiced. For sure I practiced. But that's just me. Like, everybody's different. Like, for the most part, like, when I play live, like, I make sure my shit is tight before I get on stage. Like, I don't just, like, walk up and just, like, do whatever. I don't do that.
You're not going to wing it. Yeah.
No, I don't do that. I try my best. Although I read something recently that like, you know, Frank Zappa would always go up and play a different solo every night, every time he'd go play. He never played the same shit. And everybody's different. You know what I mean? Like every person is different, like on how every person is different. Every musician is different. So for me though, no, like, you know, I want to make sure out of respect for the audience that I'm going to give them a good show. So I want to make sure, and I actually tell my musicians that to come and play in my band sometimes. Like I say, like a lot of times I'll have like a new guitarist come in and like they'll start playing on my stuff and start changing all the guitar parts. And I'm like, okay, make sure that you're beating what's already there. Like if you're going to write something that's better than what's on the record, don't play it. But if it's not as melodic or it doesn't resonate as much as what's on the record, then play what's on the record. That's how I feel, you know?
Do you think, though, isn't blues such a, you know, improvisational music? Do you feel like you would you rather lean in the opposite direction in a live show? Like, you've played some big shows, especially lately. Do you think it's more important to be playing the right stuff as opposed to just saying, let's see what happens tonight, and you improvise and you see what happens?
I don't think that you could say that about the blues. I think that the blues is, sure, like, there are blues jams that you go to where that's what it is for people. It's exhilarating. They're on the edge of their seat. They're making up different stuff. But that's not everything about the blues, right? There are blues songs that are just so sincere and are talking about that artist's struggles, and you feel it in your soul. And that's why I want to go see that person live. Not necessarily because I'm like, oh, do something different I've never seen before, right? So I think it just depends, like, what you like about the blues. But yes, obviously the blues is like the foundation of all music, and being able to, like, morph things and change things out of, like, a foundation of the blues. I believe that the blues is foundation of a lot of different genres of music, right? So
when you have a new band member come in, are they all over the place playing all kinds of things, and you have to say, no, we're playing what's on the record, or we're going to make subtle variations, but we're going to play what people want to hear. We're not going to improvise like crazy. Is that what the situation normally is?
Not normally. It just depends what kind of player is coming in. Like, I was talking about that because I had somebody playing on my stuff that was like that recently. So it just depends. And, like, you know, I mean, if you would have came into my band 10 years ago, I probably wouldn't have had the guts to say that to you. You know what I mean? But at this point, like, you know, all I have around me is people that encourage me to speak my truth in, to say what's on my mind. Obviously, be respectful of people and their talents, 100%. This person wouldn't have been in the room had I not respected their talent. But, you know, at the end of the day, and I've learned this over time, when somebody comes to my show or somebody sees a piece of my work and interviews me like you, what you're talking to is me. So anybody else that represents me, I need to make sure it's something that I'm proud of, because at the end of the day, I'm the one that has to answer the questions. You know what I mean? Like, if I have somebody come to my show and I'm like, well, I don't know why they're playing that, but they wanted to do it. No, it doesn't work that way, because it falls on me. You know what right. I mean? So yeah.
This is your publicist sent me an email because you've got a new EP coming out on Friday. And he sent me this quote, which was, throughout her career, ZZ has balanced blues and other genres, but felt pressured to compromise her roots until recently. And the new record I was listening to, very blues heavy. Who is pressuring you to compromise your roots, though? Is it the fans? Is it the industry? Like, who's making you feel like you have to compromise something?
Not the fans, the industry. Industry for sure. I think when I moved down to LA in like 2011, like I was coming out of the blues, but, like, you know, I was constantly trying to figure out how to morph blues with other genres of music that I like, you know what I mean? And so I was just always trying to keep the blues alive and bring the blues in a way to my fan base. Like, if you go back and listen to my stuff, even like Lil Darlin, which was on my album in 2012, it's like, is blues. But I think there are ways that I was trying to, like, kind of like pepper it in that was acceptable to the industry. That's how I felt. So,
but did you feel like you were trying to make it acceptable to the label that you were on, Hollywood Records? Or, like, who did you feel like the industry was that you were trying to appease to?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a... It's not just like one group of people. I think that it's trying to be accepted, trying to be looked at like, you know, people want a way to take the blues, a type of genre that's been around for so long, and keep it fresh and bring it to people and still get them excited about it. You know, so it just depends. And at this point in my career, I feel the confidence to do that.
Do you ever wish that you were playing in a sandbox that typically was more mainstream, even though the blues has had these moments where it's really penetrated? do you ever wish that blues was just a little bit more of a mainstream genre, and that maybe, you know, you could be on mainstream contemporary top 40 radio? Not that you can't be now, of course, but do you ever think about that and go, God, I picked the genre that can be hard to break into, or not break into, but, you know, have, you know.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. I think for me, I really like don't think about it that way. And it's probably for the best, right? Like, I definitely know a lot about like touring and making music and stuff like that. So I do have a business hat on my shoulders in a way. But I love the blues. I love that genre of music. So when I'm making music that I'm excited about, I don't think I necessarily go like, man, I wish more people listened to the blues. I think sometimes people are like, you know, they'd have to tell me like, you know, blues is like a smaller genre, right? And I'm like, what, it is? I don't know. I don't think about it like that.
Yeah.
About it like that, you know? Like, I remember when the Black Keys were putting stuff out, and it was like, I was listening to the Black Keys when I was in college, and I was like, these guys are amazing. And then suddenly they became mainstream. And it's because their music was amazing. It wasn't necessarily because it was like, you know, oh, okay, well, now the blues is having a moment, like, so I'm gonna do it. It's like, their stuff was awesome. People are catching on. So if my stuff is awesome and it's blues and then people catch on more, that's what I want.
So you went into the studio for this EP with Ryan Breaker, mm-hmm. and you basically
Spraker.
Said... Ryan Spraker. And you basically said, look, the past couple albums, I've been compromising my blues mentality. This album's gonna be all blues. And then what, you just start writing blues songs that really lean into the genre? Was that kind of how it happened?
Sort of. I mean, I don't think I said it exactly like that. I think I more was talking about, like, in a way, yes. But I guess I was more saying to Ryan, like, Ryan, I really want to lean further into my roots of the blues and what I grew up listening to and loving, and what really suits me very well, what I feel comfortable in. And I want to work with somebody to make this new music that loves it. Because I don't want to, you know, I've gone into the studio many times over the years where people don't want to do stuff like that. They want to push you this way or push you that way. You know, and so it was really important to find somebody that really had the right vibe to create an environment of music, a sonic environment that was what I wanted to do. And I felt like Ryan was that person. I had written with him at a writing session before. And I had a feeling he really had, like, he had a lot going on there with his knowledge of the blues, his knowledge of roots music and soul music. And we geek out, you know. It's like I go over to his studio and he's showing me something that, like, he's showing me some old videos on YouTube of like some soul stuff or some, it's like, it was a perfect fit for moving more into the blues for me with working with Ryan.
Why did you re-recorded put the Gun Down on the CP? Why you love this song? Is this the, you can't play a show without playing this song, right? Because and is that why you put it on the EP? You thought it's been, you know, a long, you know, we put the song out a long time ago, let's revisit it. Is that why it's back on the EP?
Yeah, I think it was like I picked a couple tunes that I really felt like I had to be careful, because not every song could be done multiple ways, you know, especially a song like Put the Gun Down. It's such a good song the way it was already done. So you really have to be like, you have to be thoughtful about like what songs you're going to take and like reimagine, right? But I think that Gun, it just lent itself to, for me to try it a different way. So, and I'm really excited about bringing it into more into this new world that I'm kind of going into.
I mean, there are some serious blues songs on this album, like Mother.
There's some what songs?
Some serious blues songs on this album, like Mother, which has been out for a minute, but like this can't really be how you feel about being a mother. Or maybe it is, or maybe it's a side of how you feel. Like what's going on with this song?
Yeah, it's a side. It is. It's not like the entirety of how I feel every day. I'd be a terrible mom, right? But it's a side of how I feel. And I'll tell you what I learned about the blues growing up was that it's no bullshit. You know what I mean? The blues is talking about struggle. It's talking about pain. And I can't, you know, I don't have the same struggle as a lot. Obviously, it's a lot of artists coming out of like the blues, right? Like early influential artists coming out of the blues. I can't say that I have the same struggles as them, but I have my own struggle. And so when I wrote Mother, I wanted to talk about my struggles of being a mom, not the beautiful, lovely, you know, inspiring side of the being a mom. That's not what the blues are. You know, for me, the blues is that pain, is that suffering. So that's what I tried to kind of capture in that, was that like, oh my God, what did I get myself into? This is insane. Like, this is 24/7. It doesn't stop. And it's hard. And that's what I wanted to talk about in that song.
God, do you ever feel that way though? What did I get myself into? This is too much. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, 100%. But the weird thing is, like, at the same time, like, it's the best thing I've ever done with my life.
Well, don't, like, you have to say that though? I mean, you can't not say that. I mean,
no, you don't have to say that. There are people that give their kids up for adoption. Like, you don't have to say that, right? I think that I genuinely feel that way. It's the best thing I've ever done with my life. Like, I like the love that I have for my son, for Ezra, is like no love I have ever felt in my life. And everything I've gone through, physically, emotional, like physical pain, like emotional, like overwhelming stress, all of it, it's all worth it to feel that love. And it's the same thing in a way, it's different, but it's the same way with like a relationship, right? Like when you hit it off with somebody and you're like, oh my God, this is amazing. But like, damn, it hurts when things aren't going right. Like, it's just like the ups and downs of life, you know? But so I don't think you have to say that, no, but I do feel that way.
Where is the part of your life where you pulled the song I Have No One from?
Yeah. I heard that song and I was just like, God damn, like this song is incredible for one. I really want to cover this song. And then for me, like where I pull that emotion from is like, I mean, you know, I'm a private person. I never like tell everybody exactly what's going on in my life. You'll listen to my music and you'll be able to pull whatever stories you pull out of it and make assumptions of what my life is. But I definitely can speak to feeling like I have no one at sometimes in my life when I'm upset about something or I'm going through something and I, you know, isolate and feel like that. Right. So, and I think a lot of people do. So it, yeah, but to honor that song, you really have to find that place, you know?
But that was something that you really felt connected to, or you had heard that song and you thought, God, that would be a great song to record and put out.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, I still love it now. It was like when I had to really kind of pick one song off of the EP that I really felt penetrated me the most, it's that song. There's something about that song, but just, it's just very moving and I love it. Yeah.
Who wrote that originally? I didn't even realize that was a cover.
I would have to look, but I heard Johnny Adams sing. When I heard Johnny Adams sing it, oh my God, I was just like blown away. Like I didn't really know a lot about Johnny Adams, but when I heard him sing it, I was like, oh my God, this man can sing like crazy, like an incredible singer, like holy moly. So at the top of my head though, I know that it was, you know, that it was I think it came out on, like, it wasn't on Sun, it was like a subsidiary of Sun. Like it was I'd have to look. I wasn't really ready for the question, to be honest. But,
no, that's fair. But, how big of a deal is it that this new record is on Sun Records? Does it feel kind of like it's just a name and it's like whatever, like it's a hollow thing? I'm sure the people behind it are great. Or do you feel like this connection to the legacy of Sun Records?
I definitely feel a connection to the legacy of Sun Records. I think that, I don't know, it's just kind of, is a lot. It resonates with me. Because I grew up listening to a lot of those artists, and I remember going to like thrift shops with my dad and like him showing me the records, right? Like going to the record section, the vinyl section, we'd like look at vinyl and we'd find like, if we found like a Sun label, he'd be like, this label is the Sun Records. You know what I mean? Like, I remember that. So like, so like, you know, after I, you know, I may have started making this new music and I kind of like, I heard that like Sun Records was interested. I'm like, Sun Records? Like, but Sun Records is still around, right? What? Like, they're relaunching it. And I'm like, okay, that's crazy and sounds amazing. I don't want to get too excited, right? Because you never want to get too excited.
No, you can't
get
too excited. Not about Sun Records.
No, any opportunity that you think might, you don't know for sure is going to happen. You just don't get your hopes up because you don't want it to hurt when it doesn't happen.
But why do you need a record label, ZZ? What is a record label bringing to the table here?
It's a very good question. For me, I think that it just made sense. I think that with Sun Records, because a lot of those artists that were on Sun Records, I'm such a fan of. Those artists are the real deal, the real talent. Like, they made real music. Like, they could play live. They could record those songs live. There's a beauty and there's like a movement in that whole label that when I think about me going further into the blues and going and making new music and really following my heart, it's like for me to be a part of that legacy, of the Sun Records legacy, it's such an honor to me. It's like for me, I think that's more important than being like, I'm going to stay independent. I don't want to be with a record label. You know what I mean? I think that it depends what record label it is and why you want to be with them, right? Like, it's not like a major label that I'm like, oh, okay, this is a great deal. They're going to really put me on every TV screen in America. Like, it's not like that. It's just like, for me, to connect with that legacy is such an honor. And I'm so proud of this new music. So for it to be a part of that, like, you know, Sun history is like, it just feels perfect for me.
But none of the original people who were really involved are involved in it, right? So it's almost like a completely different.
It is. Label. It's a completely different label.
So they have to say something to convince you that this is a good idea to sign the record to the label. Or was it really just the legacy and that was enough?
Well, I think it's not only the legacy. I think the people that are there now, I think that their passion for my new music and for me and for the music that they're interested in to continue the legacy of Sun speaks to me. You know what I mean? It's not like there's a group of people there now that's like, all right, well, we're taking over for Sun and we're signing pop music. Like, that's not what's happening. These are people that love great music and they don't care if it's popular and they don't care if it's going to be a number one. And that's where I'm at in my head. I want to make great music. I want to make music that people come see at my shows and they're like, oh my God. Or they hear and they're like, oh, it hit me right in the field. You know what I mean? And the people that I met behind that label that are now representing that label, that's what they love. And that's what they're looking for. And so it just connects with me. Yeah.
Is there a metric though that you're thinking in your head, and maybe you're not even thinking about, but is there a metric of like, this has to stream X amount in order for Sun Records to be happy with the way this album turned out or the way this project turned out? Like, is there anything like that? Or does it really feel like there's not, you know, to them, it's about the music. There's not as much pressure on it.
It doesn't feel like they need to hit like a certain metric. And I think that's why I'm with them. I've been there. I've done that. I don't really want to feel that way because it just sucks the life out of everything. Like, I want to go make music and like share it with a team of people that are like, oh my God, this is awesome. We love it. Like, not like, oh my God, this could be a number one for us. Let's send this to radio. Like, you know, I'm just past that in my life, you know? And so, no, I genuinely think it's like they are like very careful about what they want to represent the new, you know, the new face of Sun Records. I want to be a part of that.
I mean, that's a great answer. ZZ, your husband, Evan, is like the ultimate songwriter advocate. It's you're smiling because maybe it gets annoying when he's just always advocating for songwriters and like it's like all right, we get it, Evan. The songwriter is very important. We'll make a new category at the Grammys for them. What do we need to do? That's fine. So, but what is this always the topic of conversation around the house? It just songwriters, how do we get better rights for them? Like, what do we do? Like, is that what's happening 24/7?
No, usually it's like, oh my gosh, where are we taking Ezra so that he can run around and play with some friends? Like,
yeah,
you know, Evan is always working on a lot of different music projects, and I'm working on my music project, and we're both focused on the kids. I often, though, like, I know, you know, how important, like, his, you know, involvement in the Grammys is to him, and how much he cares about the music community, and how much he cares about songwriters and advocates for strong, for songwriters. And I think that that's wonderful. I mean, that's giving back, right? Like, that is, like, taking what you've learned and trying to give back to a community that's given something to you, right? And so I wouldn't say that he's always talking about that, but I think it's incredible what he's done. And I think that, you know, making sure that songwriters are getting the acknowledgement that they deserve through the Grammys is wonderful. And I'm so happy, because obviously that's what you're talking about. I'm so happy that he was able to make that happen and honestly change people's lives.
Did he sign you originally? Is that how you first met?
Yeah, I originally started working with Evan and like kind of like a producer, like he was like producing basically, right? But really kind of managing me at the same time. And then that's kind of where it started. Yeah.
How did this get romantic, though? And couldn't it have been so risky, ZZ?
How does it happen? It happens so easily.
Well, what does that mean? What do you mean it happens easily? Like, it was just one thing led to another, and then that was it?
I don't know. I think that, like, it's interesting, right? When, like, two people are, like, super, super passionate about something, right? Like, for us it was music. Like, I'm super passionate about music, and here's somebody that's also super passionate about music, right? So you have like a similar interest, and then you're also attracted to each other. I think it was also a lot of a really good communication. I feel like Evan and I have really good communication, which is really important to me. And so I think our ability to kind of like work together, create music together, write songs together, you know, kind of basically do, like, you know, I wrote a lot of the songs on Until the Casket Drops by myself, but he was very encouraging to me the whole time I was writing those songs, and then helping me kind of, like, you know, turn that into signing with a label and then going on tour. It's like you kind of see that you can create these things together. So, like, why not create some babies? I don't know.
What? Who made the first move, though? Was it you? It had to have been you.
You think it was me?
Absolutely. Oh my gosh, yes.
I can't answer that. We need people to wonder.
Okay, fine. But what's the, because I feel like people really struggle with this in the music industry. I'm serious, because I have so many friends who like are scared to date people in the music industry, or they date people in the industry and they keep it a secret until they're like really dating, and then they come out with it. Like, was this anxiety inducing when it was happening, or were you just going with the flow and you were like, whatever, we're into each other, it's fine, everything's going to be work out?
No, we didn't tell anybody for the longest time, but it's like you're saying. No, I don't even think, like, I'm pretty sure, like, I probably would, like, wrote, like, some of my other managers and was like, hey, just want to let you know I'm getting married.
And they had no clue. Really?
Yeah, no, they, yes. Yes, but they probably knew. And yes, I actually mean that. I think that I was probably that private about it. Yeah.
That's how you got to do it, right? Looking back, like when you look back on it, do you go, that was the right thing? Or do you go, I can't believe I was so scared to keep it so private?
I think that it's more like it just doesn't come up with people, right? And then...
Wait, which part doesn't come up?
Like, it doesn't come up like talking to people about the relationship. So maybe we were working with people and then no one asked us. And then we just didn't say anything.
Because why would they ask? They would never know.
Yeah, they just never ask. And then you never say anything. And then you're just talking about music, or you're talking about what song we're putting out. And then they just don't talk about it. So Yeah. And also, I'm a pretty private person. Like, I'm very comfortable in my music, like talking about what's going on in my life. But I probably have a very small handful of people that I talk to in my real life about what's going on. So, you know, but that's good, because I think that, like, that's why you have a lot to put into songs, is because you keep your business to yourself.
Yeah. Right. Right. I want to ask you this. This was a story that came out like over a decade ago, but I just think it's endlessly fascinating that you had discovered that your grandmother had fled Hungary during World War II because of the Holocaust, changed her last name, mm-hmm. you know, embraced a new religion. And then you found out very late in life that she was Jewish. And then you were Jewish. I'm Jewish. Like, did you feel, or I'd read that you had gone deep to kind of research the Jewish religion and kind of learn what it was about. Do you feel a connection to the religion because of that experience that she had? Do you feel, you know, do you feel any connection to it at all? Or do you feel like that's my past, but I'm kind of removed from it because I wasn't raised with Judaism in my life?
No, I do feel a connection to being Jewish, a big connection to being Jewish. It's, you know, my story with being Jewish is very unique, and I don't think that everybody can relate to it. You know, but there are so many different stories, and it's really sad, like, that my grandmother, like, had to go through what she went through, and so many people had to go through what they've gone through with just people being, I don't know, whatever, so close-minded to other people's, you know, religions, and it's insane. The fact that I didn't know it my whole life is just, it's pretty wild. And yeah, since finding out, I mean, like you said, I kind of had to make up for basically not being raised Jewish, not really knowing anything about like the high holidays or Shabbat or anything like that. So I went to school for it a little bit to actually learn. But it was a really interesting experience, because like everybody in the class that I was taking, like, had to going to convert. But I don't have to convert, right? Because my mom's Jewish. And so I'm technically Jewish. Like, it was so funny, but I'm like in this class with all these people that are converting, and I'm learning about being Jewish, but I'm actually Jewish. So like my story is so weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, but now it's like, you know, it's very important to me. I do Shabbat with my boys, and
really,
and yeah. And, but you know, I mean, I think that there's also, you know, a cold kind of truth that exists there in my brain of like what has actually happened in history, because I've kind of learned firsthand from my grandmother of how cruel people can be. So, you know, it's not something that I like talk about all the time, but no, it's very important to me. Yeah.
Did you feel important to go take those classes just and almost to honor your grandmother and her legacy? Or was it just important to you because it was just a part of your life that you just had no clue about? Because I could also picture you being, wow, that's really fascinating that my grandmother was Jewish, but that I'm not, that doesn't relate to me or whatever. Like, why was that so important to you?
Because it's who I am, because it's a part of who I am. Because I think about, you know, my mom, who also didn't know that she was Jewish, and does, you know, and you know, we cry about it sometimes that she didn't really have any, you know, it's like she was growing up in Philadelphia with a bunch of Jewish friends and like didn't know she was Jewish, you know? It's like because her mother was hiding it, you know? And then I think about like my great grandmother, and like, and then also like, there's just like little things that like my mom's aunt was like, you know, lighting the Shabbat candles and like caught the wall on fire at their house. And like, she looks back on it, she's like, oh, that's what she was doing. Like, it's pretty crazy. But no, for me, it's just, yeah, I think that it's, you know, it's a part of who I am, and I'm proud of it. And I feel differently about it. I definitely don't think it's something that I don't want to like talk about or remember. And I think it makes me feel connected to my, you know, my family.
Would your kids get bar and bat mitzvah, or we have no clue yet? They're too well, young to. Well, would they get bar and bat mitzvah, or is it too early to say? We have no idea.
No, I think they'll probably have bar mitzvahs, but
oh, that's going to be great.
Yeah, I think they'll. I mean, I think they'll probably go to Hebrew school. I would like them to. So, yeah, we'll see. But I also think that, like, you know, I also want my kids to just be aware of other religions too, and that people are different, and you know that people are different, and see other cultures, and try to respect them and know that, you know, they're all beautiful. So
that's great. ZZ, you're fresh off the Slash tour. I can picture you and Slash having long conversations about blues and music. Maybe there was time, maybe there wasn't time, but were there any of those conversations? Anything memorable hanging out with Slash?
Yeah. I mean, like, one time I was talking to him and he was, you know, he knows that I have my two little kids out there with me. I mean, I have an almost 4-year-old and like a Ellie was like, Elijah was like 6 months when we were out there, which was like a month ago, right? But
so now he's what, 7 months? Or
yeah. He's like 8 months.
He's 8 months now. What a difference a couple months can make.
It really does make a difference.
Yeah.
But I said to him, I was like, sorry, I'm like, I try to keep my kids on the tour bus and like out of the green room so they're not like crying and driving everybody nuts. And he was like, oh, it's okay. He's like, I used to bring my boys on tour with me. He's like, but then at a certain point, he's like, they don't want to come anymore. It was like, kind of felt sad. He was like, you know, they don't want to come out anymore on tour. And in my head, I was like, oh my God, like, am I going to get to a time where like my voice just like,
no, listen, my kids are going to be on the road with me forever. They're going to love it. They're going to be grateful for the experiences. That's never going to happen to my kids. Slash, you don't know anything. What you say to him?
I don't know. I probably didn't say that, but I was probably thinking it. You're right. I was probably like, no way. Like my boys are always going to come out on the road with me.
Any conversations about music between you and Slash, or is that just not what you talk about with him? Because he's talking about everything else. But
no, I mean, we talked about the blues a little bit. You know, I think that he had said that he always wanted, because he just did a blues album.
Yeah, right.
Orgy of the Dance. So he really wanted to do that project for a really long time. And he's just got so many things in the works. I was like, so are you going to do more of this? Or like, what do you, you know, have coming up? And he basically was like, yeah, I want to get off this tour. I have like, I'm going out with a bunch of different bands. Like, I'm going out this band, I'm going out this band, and then this band. And then like, I'm like, wow, you have like so many things that you're doing. It's crazy.
Does that inspire you? Because you're about to go out and headline too, like in the last couple of months of this year. But do you hang out with Slash and go, I got to do more tours? Or do you feel like you're doing enough?
I don't know. It's tough being a mom with two babies. I love being out. I mean, it's just that it's a lot. I love it though. I mean, you got to do it. I mean, the alternative is just not doing it. Just being like, all right, well, you know what? I have two kids. I'm just going to say.
No.
I love music too much.
No.
Yeah. So. It's a balance.
Okay. But Slash is doing all these tours and then he just comes into the green room. He starts telling you about all these tours that he's doing and then he goes and plays the show. Or did you find out anything interesting about any blues influences on his playing? Or do you get to play with him at all?
I didn't get to play with him, but you know what's funny? I didn't play with him on this tour. And I think it's because I thought about it, because he played with a lot of different people on the tour and he didn't play with me. But I think it's because every person he played with plays guitar, right? Like every person on the tour that he jammed with plays guitar. I was the only person that doesn't actually just like jam on guitar. I just sing.
Do you ever wish that you could play, like you do play guitar. You can play a little guitar, but do you ever wish that you had, I don't know, learned more guitar? Or do you feel like that's not that important?
Yes and no. I think it depends like where you want to put your time, right? Like I think you can only get good at like so much, unless I guess you're Prince.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But like there's a few people that are just like an anomaly. But I think for me, like, you know, I would rather be great at writing songs than be a great guitar player and a shitty songwriter, right? And so I always look at it that way. Now, maybe that's not fair, but for me, like if I would have put all my time into becoming a guitar player, then my songs might not be that great. I would rather listen, because that's for me too. Like I'd rather listen to a great song than a great guitar player. I want to hear a great guitar player play on a great song, but I want to hear a great song. So I think that's probably where I put my energy more.
That makes a lot of sense. But Slash didn't bring you up to play harmonica at any point. And does he know you can play harmonica? Because that would have been such a great performance.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what was going through his head and what he was thinking. But on the positive side of things, I can tell you that being out there for me really felt like an honor for me to be out there with him. And also, he had so many amazing blues musicians that, like, I, you know, that I respect out there. Like I was side stage talking to Keb Moe, and I was like, I grew up like going to his concert. So I was like, this is such a trip, you know, that
what
I'm
do you talk to Keb Moe about? Like, do you talk about the blues, or do you go that he doesn't want to talk about the blues because that's all anyone talks to Keb Moe about? Like, what do you say to Keb Moe?
You know, the things I can remember from like Keb Moe talking to me that like really like stood out to me were like, he was so encouraging of me to like stand up for like what I wanted in the studio. Like, he wanted to talk to me about that. And he wanted to like make sure he knew that like he really thought that like I should stand up for what I want. And it's interesting. And I think it's because maybe he felt like, I'm just assuming, like times in his life that maybe he wished that he stood up more for what he thought or something, because he was like talking to me as I was a younger artist, you know, like saying like, you really don't worry so much about what people think of you. You know, if it sounds great, if they say it sounds great, it doesn't matter. What do you think? You know, and stand up for that. And so I thought that was really powerful. You know, that's kind of what we were talking about when we last spoke. So.
And were you talking about this most recent record and how you wanted it to have more of a blues focus? And does he push you to lean into that? Or with the last record? The last record was great too, but it had all kinds of influences. Dirty mm-hmm. Shine. Like, mm-hmm. was it in between those two records that you're having that conversation with Keb Moe? And he says, you know, what does he say? He says, don't take any shit from anyone. Just lean into what you think is going to work in the studio.
Yeah, because I was asking him a lot about like where he was at with his music. And I think he produces a lot of it himself, you know? And it was kind of interesting, like hearing his story about like where he started with making music and where he is now. And yeah, I think that also he's a lot older. He's old. He looks amazing. He's a lot older than I even thought he was. And so, you know, I think that he's probably thinking about what's the most important thing I could share with this person to help them. Right. Like, cause I get it. I guess if I was talking to a younger artist, I would probably feel the same way. I'd be like, okay, well, what have I learned that I can share with this youngster to kind of like help them, you know? So I think that's kind of where it was coming from.
And is it the same advice, or if you're coming up, maybe do you have to be more collaborative with your producer? Cause maybe your producer, I don't know what, but like, is it the same advice that you would give to someone coming up, or is someone who's brand new going to be in a completely different place on their musical journey?
It's kind of similar advice. I think that usually what I say to people, like, because sometimes I get asked in interviews, like, if you could give somebody like one that's striving to be or aspiring to be an artist, like, what would you tell them? And I usually say to people, like, which is similar to what he said to me, but I guess different, like, you need to believe in yourself before anybody else will believe in you. You need to love your music and believe in your music before anybody else is going to. And I think that is that reigns really true, because a lot of times, you know, a lot of people close doors in your face. A lot of people say no, you got to really believe in what you're doing. So
did you experience that in your own life, or were you chasing some kind of praise early on where you were just craving people to love your music and the industry or the label or whatever to love it? And then was it a breakthrough and you were like, oh, okay, I have to love this first? Or did you always have an easy time tapping into that?
I think that it depends. I think that like when I first started making music, like, or when I hit a stride of making music, it wasn't like I was like making it and like getting people's feedback that it was like, it was only a close few people. It'd be like my brother and like Evan. And if they thought it was really dope, then I was like, okay, then I can like, then I'm doing good work here. I think the problem is when you open it up to too many people and want to know what too many people think, then it starts getting away from you and starts becoming something that's like maybe, you know, not genuine, you know, because you're trying to please too many people. Then you have to have like a couple close confidants to like share your art with. That's what I think. At least that's what works for me.
No, that makes sense. Okay, I know we're running out of time here. ZZ, what's going on with these hats on your website? They've been out of stock for a long time. Are they going to come back into stock? And I'm also trying to figure this out. Are you literally making these hats, or are you designing them and is someone else making them? Like, what's going on here?
They're out of stock because when I had a second kid, I was like, oh my God, I have no time to sit around. So
but
hot.
That's how, that can't be an excuse. No, I'm kidding. That's
no,
a good excuse.
Truly.
No, that's fine. But are they going to come back? Like, I feel like people love these hats.
They'll come back at some point. When my kids get older and I have time to sit around and sew like an old woman, I'll make these hats again.
You were literally making all these hats. I thought almost that you designed them. I know you took classes from a hat. What do you call it? A milliner.
Yeah.
You took class. So you really know how to do this. But the hats that were being sold on your website, you were actually making all of them with your own hands.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's crazy. I love wearing a fedora. It's always been a part of like me being on stage. And since I was a kid, I was wearing a fedora to try to kind of like as my cape to kind of exude the confidence that the blues artists that I grew up listening to had. And so, and most of it, honestly, just like now there's so many hats everywhere. It's a lot more popular than it was. Cause when I first started popping off in like 2012, like you couldn't find a lot of cool fedoras. Like it was like, you just had like Broner and Stetson and that was like it. You didn't have like cool light purple colors and like different colors of like hats with jewels on them. And like, so I really wanted to get into it for a really long time. And I really didn't know how to make them though, until I realized I was like, oh, I could go find a hat maker and like study from them. So I got into it, you know, I'd say within the last 6 years, maybe. And then I learned from them. And then, yeah, like before I had Ezzy, I was getting into it a lot more. And I made that whole line that was up on my website and then they sold out. And now I just haven't had time to do anymore.
Like, how hard is it to make a hat that you feel really confident about? Like, is it secretly not that hard or is it really hard? Like, is it templated? Like, what are we doing here?
It's pretty hard because like it depends what type of felt it is. Like if it's like a heavy like felt, then like sometimes to like mold it around the like a hat block is actually pretty hard physical work. Like, and then like tying it off, like, and then yeah, I mean it's not easy work, I will say.
Could you find a manufacturer to design them with and have them manufacture the hats so you can keep touring, raising the kids?
Yes.
And then they can sell the hats.
Yes.
Or would
I had for a long time, I had that kind of situation with Broner, with a company out of Detroit. We would sell their hats and I would kind of design them. And then that makes a lot more sense.
Oh my God. I would love to have my own hat. That would be so great.
We'll see what we can do.
I never feel like I look great in a fedora or a cowboy hat or anything. Like I always wish I could because it's such a great look, but I every time I put one on, it never works for me.
Some people say that, but I don't, it might just be in your head.
No, I don't think it is. And even if it is, I don't care because it just doesn't work for me, but it works for you. You pull it, like there are people who pull it off. I can't pull it off. I wish. Zizi, we're wrapping up here really quickly. Who are the top 5 blues artists that everybody should know about, but that they probably don't know from
secret
any time
blues
period?
Artists. Okay. Let's see. Okay. Tina Turner, actually, her most popular stuff was not blues, but she did a blues album with Ike. And it's an amazing album. It's like weird, like when you try to research the album, like I wish I could just tell you the name of it, but I don't remember off the top of my head. But I used to listen to her like sing Dust My Broom and 3 o'clock in the Morning Blues on that. It was like, we had like a CD. I actually have it downstairs because my dad brought it from Oregon, gave it to me. So I would say Tina Turner, when she sang the blues, was amazing. And then I would say, let's go quicker here. I'm just going to throw them out. Okay. Bonnie Raitt. People should listen to Bonnie Raitt. Amazing blues artist. One of the best ever. When you watch her play live, she's just, it's like, I don't know even how she's that perfect. 3, Susan Tedeschi, incredible blues artist. Let's see, somebody else. I'd say Big Mama Thornton singing the blues. Incredible.
I'll listen to that. Yeah.
And then Robert Johnson. There you go.
Robert Johnson. Are kids listening to Robert Johnson these days?
No, probably not.
No. Ugh, it's ruined. Just the next, it's just all ruined.
But they should.
ZZ, what have we left out here? The new album is coming out, Mother. It's an EP. It's six songs, so it's very listenable. Mm-hmm. Okay, you're not going to get lost in 20, 30 songs. Six songs that are very easy to listen to. I just listened to some link this morning that the publicist sent me. It's a blues album. It's freaking great. You got to listen to it. It's coming out on Friday. This is going to drop on Tuesday.
Yeah.
What else? What else?
The tour. The Dirty Sun Tour is coming up in November, and there are passes available on my website, and there's VIP packages that people can get and come hang out with me. So come see me live. I would definitely see that to anybody, you know, checking this interview out. So
you're not going to get the full experience of ZZ unless you go see her live. It's just not going to happen. And she's going to be playing harmonica, and the band's going to be incredible. And picture her band coming in with other parts and ZZ saying, no, those parts are not as good as what's on the record. Play those parts. Those are the parts I put down for a reason. That's what that's what's going on. I was just in these rooms that you're playing. You're doing Rebel Lounge, I think. I just wrapped up touring. Like, I was looking at your calendar. I was in half these rooms. This is going to be great. This is going to be a great tour. It's going to be incredible. And
thank you.
And ZZ might have more hats coming at some point, but she's got to raise her kids first. So just don't hold your breath. Yeah. ZZ, it was so great to see you. Thank you so much for taking the time.
And, my pleasure.
Absolutely. Stay well, and we'll see you on the road.